Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy and Kurt Levins. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, David. How are you doing today? Hello, Kurt. Good to see you.
Hello, hello, friends. How are you?
So, Kurt, you're in transit right now. You're strapped into your jet plane, I see.
Yes.
How many G's are you pulling right now?
Yes, I am. I'm just off a boat, but in transit between Vancouver and Victoria. As I told my lovely wife this morning, deep in enemy territory when it comes to round two of the playoffs.
Kurt, you live your life deep in enemy territory, though, don't you?
Kinda, yeah.
Although, is Pender Island kind of an expat community of Albertans or something, perhaps?
No. Oh, there's a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Kurt froze there. So we'll just continue on here, Kurt, for a sec. So this is a heading into the first game against the Vancouver Canucks. The Oilers are playing the Canucks in the divisional final. We can hear Kurt talking in the background. I hope this works.
Yeah.
I hope this works. It was working until just now, until we came on air. We were talking quite easily amongst ourselves. So the premise of this is we're going to do an exercise where we pretend, first of all, the Oilers won. And if the Oilers won, what is the cause of that? The second theoretical question we'll do, if the Oilers lost, what we would be saying was the main cause of that? And there's some overlap in our answers. So some of us have to go to option two for or three even about why the Oilers would have lost, but we'll handle that. So I don't know if we're going to be having Kurt here or not in this exercise. We'll also go with one number each for the series and a conundrum, which I have concocted. Bruce, since Kurt, we'll see if Kurt comes back into play here. What is your, if the Oilers were to win this series, what will you be saying? What will people be saying was the number one reason, do you think?
Well, kind of connected, but to put it in the right order for me, that the Oilers will have retained their defensive structure and patience long enough for their star offensive players to their game breakers to break games. But the key will be for them to hold Vancouver under wraps allow, you know, their own like bigger stars to win out in the key moments of the game. But Edmonton's defensive structure to me is absolutely critical to success going forward, as it has been already, frankly.
So what do you think? If you had to bet on that, do you think that's going to happen? Like, so what are the main obstacles of that happening? And what are the odds of that happening, would you say?
Well, we've seen it more on than off under Chris Knobloch. And, you know, we've had long stretches of play this year where the Oilers have been able to, keep the opposing teams down to 3-2-1 goals against. And I would suggest 2 or 1 would be, or 0 would be the objective in this series, because Vancouver isn't giving up a whole hell of a lot. Mind you, they weren't playing against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl to this point, and they're about to be doing just that. But they were much more on than off during Knobloch's time, and I would suggest they were in the King series in games 3, 4, and 5 after having a little bit of a rocky start in the opening two games in Edmonton.
So what would you put it at? Like, if you were to put a percentage 60, on it?
60-40?
60-40, that they'll be able to play the right style of defense often
and
enough.
And get it done, yes.
All right. I we're hearing from Kurt. Is that you, Kurt?
Hi, David.
Okay, great. You're back, although I can't see you. Kurt, Bruce just talked about the thing we'll be talking about, that the Oilers got the job done defensively. If they were to win this, that's what we're going to be talking about. What would you say is the most important thing? What will we be talking about if the Oilers win this?
If the Oilers win this, we'll be talking about how the Oilers' best players were better than the Canucks' best players. And I believe that to be the case. I think Connor McDavid's the best player in hockey, and I think that Leon Draisaitl was the best player in the league in the first round of the playoffs.
Yes, he was. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I think they will be a load for any team to handle, let alone the Canucks, who aren't the best defensive team in the NHL, and they're missing their number one goaltender. On the other side of the ice, while I believe Elias Pettersson is a fine offensive hockey player, he's yet to prove to anybody that he's an NHL playoff performer. Big difference between regular season and the postseason. And while Quinn Hughes is a Norris Trophy quality defenseman, I think he got beat up rather substantially in the Nashville series, and I don't think he's 100%. A lot of games when you're at this level come down to which best players are better than the other guy's best players. And in this case, I think it starts to line up in the Oilers' favor.
Wait, when you said that, Kurt, your reason it actually really hit the spot. Like, I thought, oh yeah, that's exactly right. But I'm going to dig a little deeper into this with you. So, first of all, what do you think the odds are that the Oilers' best players are going to be better than the Vancouver's best players in this series? If you had to put a number on it, like 70-30, 90-10, 50-50?
80-20.
Why do you say that? Why are you so confident of that?
I think, for one thing, on the playoff front, both McDavid and Draisaitl are proven playoff performers. Look at their postseason numbers. So I think they've got the resume to do it. The Oilers are also the only team in the Western Conference to go past the first round for the last three consecutive seasons. I think the team around them is better prepared as well. And that obviously, you know, supports your best players. So I just think the stars are all lined up. There's a few other reasons that I have as well, but I'm kind of saving that for our number later in the podcast.
Yeah.
So I'll give you that for now.
I just really quickly, if Demko was one of their best players, maybe those odds would change a little bit, but I agree with you, Kurt. When I think of the Oilers' best players, I think, like wherever they rank in the hockey universe, whether, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl are first, and let's say first being David and Draisaitl's in the top five, whatever that is, just set that aside for a second. I think the Oilers' best players have had numerous, numerous painful lessons, just absolutely brutal, painful lessons that the Canucks' best players have yet to have. And I think that those kinds of lessons go a long way in bringing out peak performance in the playoffs. There's a lot of talk right now in Vancouver, for instance, about the Oilers have more pressure on them. That the Oilers, for instance, they're expected to win. The odds makers are saying they're going to win. Whereas Vancouver, they were only expected to win one round after the good season. And now it's kind of freebie. Maybe they win, maybe they don't. So there's no pressure on them. I don't see it that way at all. I think it comes down to how well there's incredible pressure on all of these players all of the time, and they feel it acutely. And I think that the ability to handle that pressure is the real question. Who is best able to handle that kind of pounding, grinding, unrelenting pressure and get through it? And yeah, I think that's the veteran players of the Oilers again. They have that much more experience, that much more knowledge about it. Being down in games, being down in a series, battling through, losing a series, you should win. It's happened, you know, at least I thought in the Vegas series. So, but I do want to ask you one question here.
Yep.
If it's, so there's two ways you could be wrong about this. So like with your odds, at least Vancouver's players, best players could outplay the Oilers' best players, but there could also be more of a team game overall that Vancouver could employ, that they just have better depth than the Oilers. And the series isn't won through the best players. It's actually won third and fourth lines, second and third pairings on defense. Yeah. And that Vancouver's going to have a better all out effort than the Oilers. Do you think that's likely?
No, because I just don't think that's true. I think the Oilers are the deeper team on the forward ranks and on defense. Look at how fantastic the Oilers' third pairing has been playing, and they're not just getting 10, 12 minutes a night. So while I don't think there's a huge gap between the two, there is certainly, I think, an edge for the Oilers in that area. And for your point on pressure, I actually agree with those people who say there's more pressure on the Oilers. But I'll say this, the best athletes in any sport thrive under pressure. I don't think pressure is a negative for the Oilers. I think it will drive them.
Bruce, any thoughts on the best player equation?
Now, Vancouver, I think it's spread around a little bit more. Like they have what they call, I think, the core four of Quinn Hughes, of course, JT Miller, Brock Besser, and Elias Pettersson, who did have a good playoffs in 2020, by the way, in the bubble, but he sure didn't look very good at all against Nashville. On the other hand, you can say, well, Oilers core four is McDavid, Dreisaitl, Hyman, and Bouchard. And, you know, I think that's a pretty good matchup from Edmonton's point of view. You know, to me, maybe Hughes is, Oilers don't have a match for Quinn Hughes, but Bouchard's a pretty darn good player. And the Canucks forwards are good, but I don't see any McDavids on that team. So, that you know, they've got, they do have good depth, and I think their management deserves quite a bit of credit, frankly, for some of the pickups they made this last summer of guys like Pia Suter and Teddy Bluger. This guy, Dakota Joshua, who they got last year, has really developed into a very solid multi-purpose player for them. And so they got pretty good depth. But again, as Kurt points out, the Oilers are not lacking in that department either. I mean, Oilers have good players who never saw the ice in the first round.
You know, in terms of the Vancouver depth, they're elated right now in Vancouver with how that team won all these close games against Nashville. And they see it as the whole team kind of buying into Tocchet's preaching about defensive hockey. And they were able to do it with three different goaltenders. They were able to play super solid defensive hockey. They limited Nashville to 2 goals a game. So there's a lot of excitement in Vancouver about the Canucks, a formerly irresponsible defensive team just a year ago under the previous coach, getting it together and playing hard-nosed, disciplined defensive hockey. So that's one way of framing it. I would be a little bit concerned about the lack of scoring. I would be more worried about the Canucks if they had, you know, stopped on the Predators and been able to put up 4 or 5 goals against the Predators per game. They only scored 13 goals in 6 games, the Canucks. And this is a team that relied a lot on their strong offensive attack in the regular season. So, you know, with a player like Elias Pettersson, who was criticized heavily in the playoffs, I just wonder, is he suffering from a little bit of Ryan Nugent-Hopkinitis here? And this is curable both for Nuge and for Pettersson. But some players, smaller players, get pushed out of the playoffs. And I think we've seen it a few years in a row with Nuge, and maybe that's what's happening with Pettersson. Now, again, those players can figure it out. Lots of smaller players thrive in the playoffs as well. But they do have to start to engage in a more intense physical game and just dig in that much harder. And so we'll, you know, but that could be an issue with Pettersson. I mean, I haven't watched him closely, but there's a lot of discomfort about his play.
Yeah, he was next to invisible against Nashville.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the games I saw, yeah, it wasn't going well for him, and he was visibly frustrated at times, and that never seems to help.
Yeah. I'll add one word: perimeter.
Yeah, no, and the same criticism was made of Jordan Eberle, for instance, after the 2017 playoffs, and it actually got him traded out of Edmonton. But Eberle became, I think, a fairly solid playoff scorer as things went along. So I'm not saying that this is a fatal flaw in any of these players, or that even at some point, like, you know, Nuge could suddenly just decide, like, I'm going to get into every corner battle with my body and get chippy and nasty as I've ever been in my life, in my career. He could start playing that way. And the same with Pettersson. I just think it's a decision almost that has to be made to play that way and to pay that price. You know, and it could happen suddenly for Peterson. He could turn it on and become quite a fearsome player. Because it struck me this regular season that he was a pretty tough two-way hockey player, Elias Peterson. So,
yeah.
You know, my theory on that front is that you don't change players that much. They can improve in areas like that. But if Warren Fogle's a great example, if people think I'm being pro-Oiler here, I'll turn it around. Warren Fogle is on the edge of being a really good NHL player that the Oilers want to keep. Scored 20 goals this year. But I'd love it if Warren Fogle would actually put a shoulder into somebody. You know, it's he has all that speed and all that size, and he just doesn't seem willing to use it. Well, maybe in his makeup, he's not that guy. And I wonder if Elias Patterson, who's an infinitely better player than Warren Fogle, he might not have it in him either. And frankly, I think it's up to him to prove people like me wrong.
Yeah, maybe a sniff of the Oilers will get him going, because he usually seems to play pretty well in the regular season games that, of course, we've only
entirely
ever seen.
Fair, yeah.
But he's also skilled enough that he may find a way as a perimeter player to do a lot of damage. Like, he's a highly, highly skilled player. And the Oilers did a really good job of limiting odd man rushes in the series against L.A. But Peterson's a game breaker in open ice, and if he gets any, you know, so he could look good without changing his game at all, actually, as can Nugent Hopkins. He still looks real good on the power play, Nuge, and he looks great on the penalty kill. You know, when it comes down to just skating, situations that involve either super skating and skill, he's right there. It's just an even strength that Ryan Nugent Hopkins has been struggling this series. This last series. All right, let's move on to the next hypothetical. If the Oilers lose, what will we be talking about? Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, I think the big key there will be Quinn Hughes. If the Oilers are unable to contain that guy, they're going to be in trouble. And containing him is no easy task. Man, he's just a goose on the loose out there on the point. He goes anywhere and everywhere. He's got fabulous, fabulous lateral movement. And he just seems able to separate from the guy who's trying to check him in any direction and find himself a bit of open ice. And then from there, create dangerous passes and shots. He's got a real good sense for, you know, shooting into traffic. He's also got, you know, a terrific playmaking, which, I mean, we saw a terrific number of points. He had, I think, 75 assists this year from the blue line. And he's sort of a wild card that there's no sort of obvious way to defend him, because he plays whatever you're doing to defend him. He will find a different direction to take that puck, and it's difficult to get him under control. And, I mean, Nashville, they certainly tried, and they got a piece of him a few times, and it could well be that he's less than 100% at this point. But if he has his way, then Oilers are in trouble. That extends almost automatically to power play. If Oilers' penalty kill struggles, it may well be because of Quinn Hughes, but that would lead to, you know, reason why they might not succeed in this series.
I think of the Evander Kane factor with Quinn Hughes, Bruce. There's mm-hmm. two situations, one where we lose with Evander Kane and Quinn Hughes, and one where we win. The loss is Evander Kane, more than most of the Oilers forwards, has trouble containing the point man when the Oilers are in the D zone.
Yes.
And it may well be, in large part this year, due to his sports hernia, he's just not as agile as he'd like to be in making the quick movements that you need to defensively stay in front of players. But if Quinn can isolate against Hughes, if Quinn Hughes can isolate against Kane on at the blue line, he could go around Kane and cause all kinds of trouble for the Oilers. On the other hand, Kane is able to get there and land absolutely ferocious hits on opposing defensemen, as Drew Doughty will attest. And Yeah, I just, if he does that, if Hughes is already hurting, then good luck. What are you seeing with him, Kurt? Do you think he is down a quart in terms of performance, or is it just looks hurt, or?
Yeah, well, I want to be clear. I think Quinn Hughes is a top five, probably a top three defenseman in this league. I have huge respect for him. But I've seen a noticeable difference in his mobility from game one to game six. And so that's what my eye is telling me. And my spies are telling me that he is more than a little bit nicked up. Not so much that he can't play, but he's not, you know, the Quinn Hughes that you would expect to get from him. I felt the Edmonton Oilers were very effective in neutralizing Drew Doughty in the last series by making sure that every time Drew Doughty touched the puck, his face was in the glass.
Yes.
I think the Oilers, who are the more physical team than the Canucks, maybe not by a large amount, but I think they are, if they can have that same success with Hughes, who is not the same physical specimen that Drew Doughty is, I think that can really add to the factor that Bruce is talking about.
He's a little harder to the hit than Drew Doughty.
Yeah, he sure is.
Yeah. I just realized that I forgot in moderating this, I forgot to give my own thing.
I was trying to say something.
Thanks.
About
yeah,
that.
I
should have.
That's okay, Bruce. I'll just throw it in quickly, get it in right now. It's the special teams. So if we just go in the first series, the Oilers had just unbelievably good special teams. But that's completely dependent, not completely dependent. It's much dependent on your opponent. The Kings were disorganized on the power play. They didn't seem to have a clue about finding a way to get their best players shots on net. There was a lot of criticism in LA of not having the proper point man out there on the power play. But the Oilers' penalty kill was also exceptionally good. Warren Fogel, Nugent Hopkins, Janmark. These guys have all become Derek Ryan. They're all have become really strong penalty killers, and Vinny DeHarnay is a monster out there. So I do think that the Oilers penalty kill is likely, you know, it was 100% killing off all 13 power plays in the first round. But if the Oilers can maintain that close, you know, if they can maintain 85% or above against Vancouver, that'll be big. The power play, of course, set a record, NHL record, the best power play, recorded power play in NHL history. They've only been recording it since the late 70s. Now, in Vancouver, they're very excited about their penalty kill, which ran at 90%, I think, in the first round. Let me just see if I can call up that number quickly. Yep.
Against the much vaunted Nashville Predator offense.
Well, they have Roman Josi and Forsberg and...
I think we can agree that Nashville wasn't even close to what the Oilers will ice for a power play.
I agree, Kurt. But here's the difference could be this, is that, and I've talked about this before, LA's tactics on the penalty kill were insanely bad. Just sitting back in a tight little triangle against the Oilers and allowing those guys to pass it around at will, get comfortable with the puck. Maybe that works against most NHL power plays because players will muff a pass now and then. The Oilers' power play hardly muffs a pass. They pass even when they're on the move with incredible precision and in cunning. And if Vancouver is super aggressive on the penalty kill, as many penalty kills are, they will have much better luck, I think, than the LA Kings did. But I think if we're talking about the Oilers winning this, if there's a distinct advantage, and again, I would say I would put it at 66-33%, 67%, 33% that the Oilers will win this battle overall. But if that happens, that's going to be a huge factor in this series. Thoughts on that, either of you?
I think your point on the PK is your best point. I think as good as the Oilers' PK was in the last series, it was hot and cold all season long. Yes, 100%. And against a superior power play in Vancouver's, I think the job is much bigger. I think, David, that's a really smart point.
Yeah, in January, the Oilers couldn't be scored on no matter what. And then in February, all of a sudden, the PK won a number of games where they were getting blitzed for goals in every game, sometimes two or three of them. And then they've kind of had this up and down. They sustained for a while, but it's impossible to keep it going full time. But I thought they were a little bit more erratic than maybe normal. And unfortunately, the playoffs, you can't afford to have three or four down games in a row. Yeah. You know, you have to cut off any poor performance in a specific area, one game, get right back on the horse and solve whatever the problem is in the short term.
I like their current formation on the PK, and I think it is related to their success. Their use of personnel rather than formation, because they've been using the same tactics since Knobloch took over, at least. But I think that the Daharnay-Ekholm pairing, which I think they started to send them out, if I'm not mistaken, first on the PK over Nurse and CeCe. CeCe all year long has been an outstanding penalty killer. Nurse has had his struggles. He's been less consistent. But Daharnay and Ekholm together have really gotten the job done. So I think that's what gives me optimism on the PK. And Fogle, in the last half of the year especially, I think has really stepped up to become, like, they haven't missed Connor Brown because Warren Fogle has been so good. Adam Henrique has been very good as well since he's gotten here. He's a very smart player and does that job well. So I'm pretty bullish about the Oilers' penalty kill against Vancouver. But as you guys say, Vancouver's power play is a different beast than LA's. I mean, with Quinn Hughes on the point, it's just it's completely different. Peterson has a really good shot. One-timer shot, Brock Besser as well. So JT Miller's a bull out there on the ice, a smart player. So no, So I just don't see them skunking the other team. But if they can keep it to, you know, one power play goal out of 10 or two power play goal, you know, three power play goals out of 20, that'll be good. All right, Kurt, if Vancouver wins, what will we be talking about?
That a healthy Thatcher Demko played goal for Vancouver. I thought going into the playoffs, I was primarily worried about Vancouver if Demko was in goal, because kind of like Quinn Hughes, I think Thatcher Demko is one of the best three goaltenders in the league. And I think he can steal not just a game, I think he can steal a series for you. With all due respect to the Canucks goaltenders who helped them win the series over Nashville, there are no bad goaltenders at this level, but the really great goaltenders can turn in great performances one game after another. And if you're a backup in this league, it's for one main reason. You couldn't maintain that kind of consistency. You're still a good goalie. You just can't do it night in and night out. I think Thatcher Demko's presence is probably the difference maker in this series. If he plays, I think he's a better goaltender than Stuart Skinner, and I think he gives the Canucks an edge. But I don't think the goaltending matchup is close if Demko remains out. The way Stuart Skinner's playing, particularly how he improved through the series, I actually give the Oilers the edge. In fact, someone was asking me the other day, well, what do you predict in terms of the outcome of the series? I said, well, I have two predictions. I said, if Thatcher Demko plays, I think the Oilers win in seven. If he doesn't, I think the Oilers win in six.
Okay. You don't put a lot of faith in Seelovs or DeSmith, who DeSmith's been good against the Oilers, and Seelovs was fantastic against Nashville. Yeah.
They're backup goaltenders. They are capable of pitching a good game or two, just like most backup goaltenders in this league are. But if they can maintain that over a series against McDavid and Draisaitl, then I'll say I was wrong and I'll believe it. Until such time, history teaches us that backup goaltenders just don't become Ken Dryden overnight.
Funny, I was just going to bring up that name, Ken Dryden. because Shelov's is not so much a backup as he's a young goalie that's on the rise. And there's no way of knowing that. I was going to say he's not Jordan Binnington in 2019 or Ken Dryden in 1971, coming up with, you know, relatively little experience, but hotter than a pistol and no fear, you know. And whether he can do and maintain that for any length of time is an open question. I will remind that he was, in fact, the most valuable player of the IIHF Men's World Championships last year when he backstopped Latvia to a shock bronze medal, where they beat Sweden and USA in the medal round after upsetting a few other countries to get to the medal round. So, and he was a big part of that reason. So he's not a nobody. He's just not very well known yet. But he's, shall we say, emerging. So he kind of scares me more than DeSmith does, but Demko is definitely the, I mean, he's the number one guy there for a reason. And if Oilers were facing a healthy Demko right from game one, that would be a pretty fearsome proposition.
Yeah. As Ken Holland likes to say, according to the NHL guide and record book, Thatcher Demko is the goaltender you should be worried about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Shelov doesn't have much of a profile there, I'll admit.
Nope. I admire what the kid's done. I think he's played just terrific. But if he can do that over seven games against McDavid and Draisaitl, I'll become a believer.
Yeah, I had the same thought as you, Bruce, like same worry watching this young goaltender, because we've seen it more than once. We've seen it a few times. So it's definitely a possibility, and he certainly looked good. On the other hand, I was really relieved as an Oilers fan, and no offense to Thatcher Demko, when he got injured, I was really relieved because he is a fantastic goalie. And I think that the NHL goalies are really, most of them are pretty similar. Like there's a lot of similarity between them, and much of their statistical difference comes down to how good is their defense in front of them. And I think we saw this with Stuart Skinner, the Oilers goalies this year. When the Oilers defense was good, the goalies looked pretty good too. And when the defense was leaky, the goalies didn't look too good. So I think that the goaltending is likely to be as good as the defense in this series. I don't think Skinner has, for me at least, he had a really great playoff game against LA, but I see him, I put him not, I'm not sure that he's a starting goalie in the Thatcher Demko class, who I think is such a huge cut above that you would say, oh, obviously there's an advantage here. I don't think there's an obvious advantage one way or another right now with Demko out in the goaltending. And it's going to come down to team defense. So I agree with you, Kurt. If Demko comes in and he can be himself, they could reel off some wins fast against the Oilers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's a really good goalie.
I certainly would be worried about that. You know, with the young Vancouver goaltender, I would argue he wasn't the best goaltender in the Nashville series. I thought Vancouver had the better of the chances, and Saros, I thought, was the superior goaltender overall. The young guy played well, don't get me wrong, but I think he had way more support in front of him than Nashville's goaltender did.
Yeah, well, yeah, and support's a big part of it. I mean, who would have said 2 weeks ago that Alexander Georgiev was going to outplay Connor Hellebuyck in the Colorado-Winnipeg series, right?
What a great point.
And yet, here's Hellebuyck. Here's Winnipeg that won 34 straight games during the year without giving up four goals in a game. In the playoffs, they couldn't hold Colorado to four goals in any game. They got five or more in all five games. And so it's always a bit of a wild card in goaltending. And if you get enough unstoppable shots on them, you can make any goalie look bad.
And I didn't watch much of that series. Was that a function of team defense, or was that a function of Colorado's incredible passing and shooting ability that Hellebuyck looked so bad?
They scored some great goals.
They did. So I'm wondering, was Hellebuyck that bad and Georgiev that good, or was it mainly just one team can really, really score goals at a frightening rate with frightening skill, kind of like the Oilers, and the other team can't?
Yeah, if you ask me, I think Colorado's just an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah,
they're scary. I'm glad they're playing Vegas or Dallas. I mean, this couldn't have worked out. Like, in terms of how things have worked out, playing LA first for the Oilers and then playing a Vancouver without Demko. I mean, compared to having you know, let's say Las Vegas is your first round matchup, and
which
then
going against, happens.
Yeah, going to, if you had to then go against Colorado or Dallas. Anyway, thank goodness for small favors, big favors. I think if the Oilers lose, and I'm going to, this kind of harkens back to Bruce's point, it's going to be because they didn't play strong, disciplined team defense. And by and large, they did. And I think there's a number of key players in this regard. Players who, you guys mentioned Leon Draisaitl playing so well. I completely agree. And they're all patting him on the back for playing good defensive hockey. And I like Leon's answer that I think he said something like he generally plays good defensive hockey. He's an inconsistent defensive player. And it's a long season. And against Vegas last year, his defensive play was one of the reasons they lost. If they lose this time to Vancouver, I think we'll be talking about the same thing. That for some reason, Leon didn't get it done. And he's not the only one. Darnell Nurse had some real big struggles, I think, against Los Angeles. And he's had struggles all year long in terms of gauging risk-reward. And it's his main trouble is coming when he tries to do too much. This is the same old story of pinching up ice or rushing too deeply when it's not really advised to do so. If he can contain those things, he like Draisaitl, can play excellent defensive hockey. In fact, Darnell Nurse has played long stretches, many months of solid defensive hockey, where he gets in the defensive pocket, sticks there, and shuts down people coming at him. If the Oilers lose, though, it'll be Bouchard, Kane, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, Nurse, the swing, what I call the swing defensive players, players who can get the job done, who have gotten the job done. But if they want to win the Stanley Cup, they must get the job done. And if the Oilers lose, it would be because more than half of those players didn't. And in big games, that means the difference between one or two goals and winning and losing. Thoughts?
I think you're being too hard on Darnell Nurse, and you'll read why I think that in my nine things column tomorrow.
Good stuff. I also well, you can say it right now though, Kirk, because this is going to be attached to it.
I think there's a lot of people, maybe you included, who want to be Darnell Nurse to be something other than what he is. How's that for a teaser?
Well, you made the argument. You did make that argument, I think, last week, and. Or 2 weeks ago, and I like you want him to play this instinctive hockey, but I'm just. But go ahead, articulate what you're thinking.
Well, I just think you've got this big, tall, lanky defenseman who has an elite ability to close, and everybody wants him to play passive. I think you're taking away one of his best tools, and I think you've been talking to Bob Stauffer too much. Bob's the king of Darnell Nurse, less is more. Well, Bob could never skate like Darnell Nurse could. I think if you're a skater like Darnell Nurse and you can close on guys in the neutral zone like he can, you want him to. I think you're just taking away one of his best skills by forcing him to just sit in the pocket and be Vincent Desharnais.
Bruce?
Yeah, closing gaps is something that he does well. Sometimes he doesn't quite pick his spots like that. I thought that one in the neutral zone on Arvidsson was a misplay where Arvidsson was standing still on the boards at the red line and Nurse suddenly tried to close the gap on him and Arvidsson just spun and delivered an absolutely mouth-watering backhand saucer pass up the middle for Lozotte to go in and score. You know, that's one play here and there. Nurse, to my eye, he wins so many more battles than he loses that a lot of people don't even rate them as battles. Because he either wins a race to the puck and walks away with it, or he overpowers some dude and takes it off him and walks away with it. It doesn't even look like a battle because he was always going to win it, right? But he does win it. Yeah. And he doesn't get much credit for it oftentimes. And this whole question of if the Oilers lose, what's going to be the reason? Like what will be the general conversation will be, in large part, the reasons that people have already identified that are their sort of pet peeves with the team as a whole. CC wasn't good enough. Nurse wasn't good enough. The goaltending wasn't good enough. You know, that there'll be a lot of sort of the usual culprits, you know, named as culprits, almost. And, you know, there'll be specifics attached here and there. The particular plays will be magnified in importance and others downplayed, depending on who was involved. And there's so much sort of subjective stuff in that sort of analysis. And I'm talking about the, you know, the royal country writ large, not any sort of specific people, but that'll be sort of the tone of the conversation of these very sorts of questions. If they lost, well, it's because that damn Holland didn't, whatever, right? Yeah. Or he did sign so-and-so and he should have, you know. Anyway.
I'll just add one quick point, and I think David knows this. I put way more fault on Ryan McLeod on that play than Darnell Nurse. It's a lack of awareness of where his man was in that zone on that play, I think, is what cost that goal. Darnell Nurse took his man. If Ryan McLeod, who is a terrific defensive player, by the way, so I don't mean to pick on him, but if he'd had better recognition on that play, I think that's a nothing play. Anyway,
it's a nothing play if one of two things happens. One, if Ryan McLeod takes his man, it's a nothing play. Or two, if Darnell Nurse closes fast enough on his man to take him out and block that pass, a head-manning pass, it's a nothing play. So I give kind of equal blame on the play to both those players. Kurt, I think your critique of generally of me and people like me in terms of Nurse is correct. I would like him to play defense more like Niklas Lidström, which was a very cerebral kind of defensive play where he was always acutely aware of the danger man, the player coming into the slot late and shading back towards the cover off that player to block the passing lane. He was always on his feet so he could read the play and make the right play. And yes, I admit, I would love to see Darnell Nurse play that style. And I don't think, honestly, I think you can do that without taking away your aggression. Because when you then engage, it's that moment of decision where you're assessing the risk reward. And all I would ask of Nurse is this: that play, let's just use the play that we're talking about, the one in the neutral zone. When he's attacking the player with the puck in the neutral zone, Arvidsson, what are the chances that he's going to win that battle by attacking him aggressively? And what are the chances he's going to lose it? I'm going to say that wasn't a 50-50 battle because he was so far away from Arvidsson. It's more like he's got a 30% chance of winning that. And all I'm asking in the decision-making, in that moment when he attacks, attack all out. Go all out, man. Do everything you can. But in the moment when you're deciding, if it's not a 90% chance or 95% chance you're going to win that battle, don't do it. Don't do it.
And this is where we differ a little bit again, because I think a lot of that is dependent on game situation. If you're leading a game 2-0, you don't make that play. And if you do, it's a mistake, right? But if you're trailing or level, I think that's a better than 50-50 play. Nurse got his man. I maintain it was the high forward that cost that goal. We could go around in circles on this.
What was the score? I'm just trying to think what the 1-1. Score
one.
It was 1-1.
It was 1-1 at the time.
Yeah.
Right. If you're protecting the lead, I think it's a mistake to be that aggressive in the neutral zone. But when you're level or leading, if you're, again, I'm giving everybody my call and I don't want to do that. I'll make a further case tomorrow morning of why we should want Darnell Nurse to play one particular way and not another.
I don't think this podcast is going to appear, Kurt, until you... Although I could attach it to the posts that are up right now. And don't worry about that, Kurt. People want to hear what you have to say right now.
I've already given you 3/4 of it, so don't worry. I'm not holding back much.
See, I think Darnell Nurse can be the super aggressive player and just make slightly better decisions, because it's just a few decisions a game, honestly. Most of his decisions are excellent. He just sometimes they're not quite there. But this is, and it's not just him. I don't want to sound like I'm picking on him. Like I listed about 5 players who I consider to be swing players defensively, who I think have that risk reward wrong at times. I mean, it's so obvious with defensemen, but with the forwards like Kane or Draisaitl, it's often less obvious that they've even made a mistake. But and their aggression is so often rewarded by a goal for, right? Like if they didn't go for it, they wouldn't score. So it's just with the defenseman, sometimes the risk reward is, what do you get if you win the battle? How much more do you get?
Yeah.
If Drysdale wins it, then he get the puck and go score. If Darnell Nurse wins it, he's not going to get the puck and go score. So anyway, this is my part of the calculation is the risk reward. The reward isn't that great on that play. He could have shut down that play by backing off just as easily. So
just to move on a little bit, but to further the point, I agree with you, including Drysdale and Kane in that conversation, because I think we've seen evidence of it. I'm surprised you put Ryan Nugent Hopkins in that group of players. To my eye, he's a very dependable defensive player.
I think that it's more his decision making's pretty good on defense, his risk reward. But
I think you're
underselling
him.
Especially when he's at center, he would get overpowered.
Sure, but that's not decision making. That's physique, right?
Sure. And sometimes though, he can get puck watching. We've seen it in this last series against Los Angeles. He can be on team puck watcher.
Yeah. So, you and I agree to disagree on that point.
All right. Fair enough. All right. We are moving on to our numbers. Bruce, your numero.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 105%. And if the Oilers special teams power play plus penalty kill hits 105%, I really like our chances, Edmonton's chances of winning the series. Where just, you know, their Edmonton special teams outperform Vancouver's. Now, against LA, it was 145%, which is just outrageous. Apparently, that was the biggest such combination number in a series, any playoff series since the 70s.
What numbers are you adding together for people not
power
familiar
play,
with this?
100% penalty kill in the King series plus 45% on the power play for a sum of 145%.
I see.
And that combination of those two was popularized originally by Scotty Bowman as a way of measuring, you know, how his special teams were doing. He wanted those two numbers to combine to be over and well over 100%. In other words, if his power play is scoring 25% of the time and their power play is scoring 15% of the time, then you're coming out ahead, right? And it's kind of like similar as PDO, which is a combination of shooting percentage and save percentage. You want that to be over 1,000, meaning you're converting a higher percentage of your shots than the other guys are. But this one is specific to special teams. And I just like to see the Oilers comfortably north of 100%. And I think if they can do that on special teams, they're going to be able to hold their own enough at 5-on-5 to see it out.
Kurt, what about you?
My numbers?
Yeah.
My numbers are 5 and 6. The Oilers had to play 5 games to advance to the second round. The Canucks had to play 6. Often when you get to the second round and beyond in the postseason, tiny little slivers make a big difference in the end because the two teams are so close. I think the fact that Edmonton didn't have to make an extra tip, didn't have to play an extra game against a very physical LA team, gives their key players a chance to rest and recover. We see Henrique and Kane, you know, not at practice the last couple of days. It's an extra couple of days of Connor McDavid without, you know, being punished physically. Whereas the Canucks had to go into Nashville and play against a very physical Nashville team. And had that additional travel as well. I think if these two teams are going to be as close as it sounds like all three of us think they are going to be, I think we may look back and say to ourselves, it was good fortune that the Oilers dispatched LA in 5 games, because if they hadn't, that may have ended up making a big difference.
Vancouver, I think they're fortunate that the series doesn't start, it sounds like, till Tuesday. If they'd had to play Sunday, like right after the end of the Nashville series, it would have come home to roost a little quicker. And they did very well indeed to get out of Nashville with the win. And so they didn't have to play a game 7, which would have been a big advantage for Edmonton. I would have even been happy with, you know, several overtime periods last night in Nashville.
You and me both.
But your point about the travel is well made. Near as I can tell, and I had a hard look at an NHL map last night, I believe the trip from Vancouver to Nashville is the longest within a conference road trip that's possible.
It's a bear.
Yeah, it's 4.5 hours. And of course, they had to fly to Nashville and then they had to fly home from Nashville. They're probably feeling pretty good on the way back. But that's still, you know, I was very, very happy Edmonton did not have to play a game six in L.A. this time as they had the last two times. I thought closing out that series in the fifth game was huge.
My number is not a specific number, but it's the grade A shot differential in this series. Last series of the playoff series the Oilers have been in since 2021, so that's against Winnipeg, LA, Calgary, Avs, LA, Vegas, and LA again. The Oilers' grade A shot differential in this last series was plus six. The Oilers averaged 17 grade A shots per game, and LA had 11. Plus six is an enormous grade A shot differential. The Oilers absolutely put the boots to the Kings. They were unlucky, frankly, to lose any of the games in that series. I thought it would be five. It was five, but they could have easily won in four. In other series, there's been two series where they've been out grade A'd. So against Winnipeg, they were minus one in terms of shot differential. And against the Avs, they were minus 4.8 grade A shots per game. They had the boots put to them by the Colorado Avalanche. Last year in the playoffs, they were plus 2.6 against LA and plus 2.5 against Vegas. So having a grade A shot differential doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win the series, but it's a generally, it's a pretty reliable indicator of the Vegas series, notwithstanding. I'll say it's the exception to the rule, but I think if the Oilers can have, I'm what I would like to see, I don't think they're going to maintain that plus six, but I'd like to see plus three. I think if they're plus three and above against Vancouver, that's a really good margin for this team. And I think they can, again, I think they can do that. I'm picking the Oilers to win. I haven't thought if it's going to be five or six games. I don't think it'll be seven. I'll go with six. Vancouver being that much better than Los Angeles and luck being what it is. But I think if they can maintain plus three grade A shots, that's the key for the Oilers. Alrighty, conundrum time. And the conundrum is, did the Oilers get an advantage from the referees in the first round? And will they be able to maintain that into the second round?
Yeah, I'm going to go very much against character and say yes. They did get some breaks from the men in stripes in the first round. They even got the war room to see things their way in game six with that Draisaitl shot in the webbing of the glove. And yes, David, I did subsequently see the photographic evidence that they looked at, and it was pretty clear. I thought even with the webbing there, I could see the entire puck, and it was all beyond the posts, which were lined up with each other from that particular angle. But there was calls, like LA was enraged at the end of game six. Victor Arvidsson had some very choice, easily lip-read words that presumably were directed at the stripes when in the last minute, Derek Ryan, I thought, got away with which on second look was a clear hold on Adrian Kempe along the boards when he had no stick. And partly as a result of that, Draisaitl came away with the puck and broke out of the zone, and he got hauled down. They called that one, which was a penalty, but the first one also, I thought, was a penalty. And LA was thinking, you know, we have a 6-on-4 with 30 seconds left. We got the same fighting chance that Nashville had in terms of decent chance to equalize. And they're also probably remembering in game four, the only power play Edmonton got was when their own guy, Andreas Englund, lost his stick and got a holding penalty along the boards for holding. But it was really no different than what Derek Ryan had done. And yet that holding penalty turned out to be, the one goal in the hockey game. And all that said, the real difference between Edmonton and LA wasn't the calls, it was the execution on the special teams that followed. That when Edmonton did get a power play chance, they executed, and the Kings got executed.
Can it be maintained? Would you think this will be maintained, Bruce?
Vancouver's got some pretty accomplished divers on their squad. This hasn't changed. Pedersen, he's elite. Uh-huh. That particular black art. So I expect that the number of, like, Evan had 20 power plays to 12 for LA. I never would have dreamed, you know, after what seems like a century of California officiating trials and tribulations. But Edmonton, I do think they kind of got the better of the margins in that last series. And I mean, the old saying, the veterans get the call. Well, Edmonton's got the oldest team in the league now. So maybe it's true. You know, they know what buttons they can push and not, maybe. Or it's just a matter of respect from the men in stripes or what have you. But I expect things will be a lot more even in the Vancouver series. So ultimately, again, it'll be the execution on whatever special teams occur. And I'm hoping there's some penalties. Like, I don't want to see just 60 minutes of 5-on-5 where they're afraid to call anything.
Kurt?
I generally agree with Bruce's assessment of the officiating in the LA Edmonton series. I think that's fair. I think for maybe the first time in memory, Edmonton got the benefit of the calls in a playoff series. Exactly. But I think your observations are fair. Generally speaking, while I think as fans, we all, me certainly included, get worked up about calls or lack of calls. But I think in the end, I think you see that generally speaking, that stuff comes out in the wash. At the end of the day, for teams that argue that the officiating didn't go in their favor, and particularly I saw a lot of Kings fans on Threads saying, Edmund only won because of the power play. And I thought to myself two things. Well, one, when did the power play stop being a part of the game? And two, you know what? Just play better. You know, if you really think that the officiating undid you, well, then play better. You know, LA lost in 5. They weren't near good enough. The officiating wasn't a factor. Full stop, period.
Championship teams, whatever obstacle is put before them, they fight through it. They work through penalty calls that go against them. They take advantage of their power plays. They win. And there's no excuses. So if you're the coach and the players, it's absolutely something you should not think about. And your entire focus, every scintilla of energy is directed towards winning the game, not complaining about the referee. And I liked Evander Kane on that clip talking to the referee, actually. He was very calm and just asked, you know, just explain what happened. And the referee was actually very calm in return. And there was Drew Doughty in there nattering away at Kane. That's a fantastic clip if you haven't seen it. It's in my post.
Oh, yeah.
If you can't find it, it's in my post on Evander Kane silencing his critics. So that said, I think that there is bias in NHL officiating. That generally speaking, we've seen it go against a younger upstart Oilers team against established California teams in the past, more established California teams. And this time, for whatever reason, the Oilers are viewed as the established team that has a claim to winning. And in making predictions, I mean, one of the things you can do is, you know, follow the money. How does everyone make the most money? And if you think that McDavid can boost ratings and boost interest in the game, boost betting in the game, boost all the money around hockey, there might be some inclination on everyone involved in hockey for the Oilers to win. And it might not be anything but subconscious. The refs may never think that. And they would strenuously, I'm sure, object to what I just said. They would hate it and they would think it's ridiculous and stupid and wrong. But that's what I think, that those kinds of factors can come into play. And I think it benefits the entire NHL if the Oilers win at this point and have that kind of profile from their best players in the United States. So there you have it.
It's a respect thing, too. I mean, at a certain point, a guy's paid his dues and the refs, you know, I mean, McDavid, he gets called for penalties. Sometimes you see a game and he gets a hooking penalty and he gets hooked like 30 times and none of them get called, it seems like. And I'm exaggerating for effect, but you know what I mean. And at a certain point, you've kind of earned your stripes, and I think they're there. And so it's and that's your other point. If the NHL really cared about ratings, do you think they'd have Connor McDavid playing games on national TV that started at 10:50 p.m. Eastern time? So I'm not sure that they've really got a handle on TV and ratings at all.
Well, if that's happening, Bruce, because of ratings, because Toronto, there's one team that they'd like to win more than the Oilers, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs, because that's the biggest TV market in the hockey world. And that's why the Oilers are later on TV, is because of Toronto, I'll suggest. Kurt, theories?
I think the Oilers have more experienced players who have more miles with the officials. So I think that things tend to level out a little bit more for them now than they used to. That happens with most veteran players on most veteran teams. I don't think it's anything unusual here. And as for the NHL having a bias, I do think the NHL has a bias toward revenue, as most successful businesses do. But I don't buy into the thought that they may actively do something to favor one team over another. I think they understand that their integrity would be at stake and it would be too big of a risk.
I don't think they would actively do anything either, honestly. I think it's unconscious. That's what I'm saying, that this instinct that we all have to do what benefits us most, we just do it. We don't think about it. So that's what I'm going on in terms of this prediction.
Yeah. And just a friendly heads up, I've given you a 2-minute warning on the old battery level.
All right. Well, Kurt, I think we're ready to wrap. So thank you, Kurt, for joining us. Much appreciated, Kathy, for lending us your husband. I don't know if you're still there. Probably you're sitting alone in a car now, Kurt, I'm guessing. But thanks, everybody. Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.
There's Kurt right at the very end.
Hey, fellas.